actually. And I ascend the podium. So, what's the structure of this presentation? It's basically in two halves. I'm going to say a few words about the context of the mobile social world and what this could mean for information literacy. And I'm going to keep remembering to try to talk in this. And then Andrew's going to add a few words on what that could mean for information literacy. Then the second part of the presentation is going to be very much about what we've been up to in our various institutions. You've got two for the price of one. In other words, we could have easily, both of us, been doing separate presentations. Anyway, so I'll be doing it about Bedfordshire, and Andrew will be doing something about Huddersfield experience.
But first of all, I was just aware yesterday that we were doing all the presentations, and we weren't necessarily modelling use of mobile technologies at all. So I felt guilty about that this morning at breakfast time, and I've added a few things in. So I've got a little poll for you. So if any of you want to take part, we're going to tell you what we think mobile information literacy looks like. But if any of you want to tell us what you think mobile information literacy looks like and how it's different from traditional views of information literacy, have a little vote in our poll. You can either text to the number up on the screen with the first word of the text message 238200 followed by your message, or tweet at poll 238200 followed by what you think mobile information literacy looks like, and we'll come back to that right at the end. I'm going to do a few other bits and pieces to do with mobile tech during the talk as well. First of all, I thought I'd tape us today. Well, tape, that's old fashioned, isn't it? Record us today on a little mobile recording device. I'll stick that on my netbook later on, probably at lunchtime, and send it through the cloud, and it'll be on the repository at my institution with the slides within about 24 hours. Tweeting during the talk as well. So during the talk there should be some tweets going out from us about some of the things we're covering. Was that all I said I was going to do?
He didn't tell me I was being recorded. I've had to behave myself.
You've never behaved yourself in your life.
When I get desperate, I sing.
I'm not desperate yet.
Anyway, this is what it's about on our campuses now, isn't it? And being a good Catholic, I had to bring that one in. I just love that slide. We don't think the Pope would like that very much. The whole point is that everybody is connecting using mobiles, aren't they? That's what it's about. And that's what it looks like in our institutions now. So I wonder what the web generation is about. Now, I could talk a lot about that, but the cyber reports, I imagine some of you will have read those, from Ian Rowlands and David Nicholas in the University of London, have shed a lot of light on that. And we don't all of us now go around like I used to, talking about the characteristics of the web generation, because a lot of that was overblown. But something has happened, there's no doubt about that, over the last few years. And you've only got to walk around this city and you see the same phenomenon, people using information on the move, on a bus, on a train, on an aeroplane. I'm trying to eat this guy here. So is all this turning everything upside down? Now, these people who are doing things on mobiles, are they actually good searchers? Do they know what they're doing? That's the question. And then we come to something, oh, I always use this slide. A mad academic, this one, isn't it? What's happening to information literacy? Well, what the hell is information literacy? Now, you'll be relieved to know that I'm not going to talk about that for long. Because there's a lot of argument and endlessly boring, tedious articles written about that, usually by Americans. Whoops. And is it information fluency? Is it IT? What is it? Now, I think one way to begin to start looking at that is to start thinking, in fact, there is something there that we all need to know. We call it different things. That's what makes it difficult. For in a public library, if you're in industry, or in higher education, or in a school, you all need to be able to do certain things. And I suspect that one way to begin to make sense of this is an idea that I had the other day, is that you put a different pair of glasses on according to the audience that you're looking at. So in higher education, you put a pair of glasses up there, down here, wherever, up there, like that, and therefore you start looking at the sort of characteristics that might be in the Schonel Seven Pillars, for example. So information literacy will vary, and people argue endlessly about it. But wait a minute, the mobile thing, where does that fit into it all? I think it adds a new twist. That's what it's about. It makes things even more complicated. Maybe transliteracy might be a better way of looking at it. Again, this is not the place to go on about this particular phenomenon. There's been quite a lot about that on the web recently. But I think it might help us to begin to understand that information literacy is not about the library and those bloody databases that librarians love to talk about and make more complicated. It's far, far more than that. So the mobile thing, what does that do? It gives that extra twist, but it also gives us a new opportunity to reach our users. Now I'm going to hand over to Andrew to take this a bit further.
Thank you. Well, I've been wondering about how information literacy might be different in the mobile world. I've been looking for these sort of different pair of glasses to put on to look through when we're thinking about information literacy. When search is dominated by things like these or the slates that people have on the apps, about accessing information anywhere, anytime, anyhow. And I think there's real weaknesses in the sort of information literacy models we tend to use now. They tend to be heavily competency based. There's lists of things that say, if you're this, that and the other, then you are information literate. And I think, as Peter says, information literacy depends on what you're doing and the environment you're doing it in. It's all about context. Not to think about the fact that most of these models came out of 80s, early 90s, sort of pre-World Wide Web, let alone a pre-mobile world. So I started to dig around a bit and try and work out from the literature where mobile information literacy might vary from sort of the traditional views of information literacy. So I've got four slides that say the four areas where I've pulled out from the literature where things might vary. And then I've just thrown in another slide this morning that's based on interviews I've been carrying out recently that I've just coded over the last couple of weeks. So it's just the stuff I'm making up as I'm going along, really, the fifth slide. But the first thing from the literature, the big difference in mobile search and mobile information literacy is where it happens. Traditionally, when we think about information literacy, especially in colleges and universities, we think of it being carried out in the library or behind a fixed PC. They're sort of controlled environments. That's not how mobile searching for information happens. It happens in messy, uncontrolled environments. You know, on the bus or the train, on the way to work or the way to university. And on all sorts of different devices. Phones, PDAs, slates, netbooks, e-book readers. Practically anything, any little piece of electronic equipment these days can connect to the internet. So searching and using and accessing information can happen from loads of different devices in loads of different places. Next area is what sort of information needs are met on the move. So what sort of things people look for to meet those needs. It, according to the literature, it tends to be heavily context dependent. So what you search for depends on the main activity you're carrying out at the time. So this is a quote from one of the interviews, and this was fairly typical. The sort of information people searched for is the next train home, or where the train station is, or perhaps using an app like Around Me to find out where the nearest takeaway is. They wouldn't do the sort of thing we'd expect in a fixed environment, in a university, which is search for why the train station is based there, or the place of takeaway cuisine in our culture. It's really context-specific information they search for. Oh, I should have mentioned before as well. Oh no. Oh, come on. So the next area is how the search. People don't spend time searching in a mobile environment. It's very quick, easy searching. If it takes any significant amount of time, then they don't bother. And people tend to go to preferred places. So the evaluation of information tends to happen beforehand, so people will decide beforehand what sort of website they'll go to, or what sort of app they'll have on the phone. So the evaluation will be deciding on that in the first place, and then they won't necessarily evaluate the information when they go to that website or go to that app, because it's been thought about beforehand. And last from the literature, with the time spent searching. I mean, people spend less time refining searches on the phone, but time is seen as a real driver for using mobile devices. That quote there was from an IT person I interviewed who had a house full of kit, as you might imagine. He had a phone, he had a games machine that can connect to the internet, he had a laptop that lives on his sofa, and he had a fixed PC upstairs. And when he talked about searching information from home, so from a fixed place, he'd jump on his phone by default. He wouldn't reach over and pick up a laptop and spend 30 seconds waiting for it to come on. It was just so tempting to get that instant result from the phone. So that's quite quick from the literature. And that's just summing it up. But these are the aspects of mobile information literacy that I've just started to pull out of the interviews I've been doing recently. So I thought I'd throw these in here. And when I did the interviews for these, I was bearing in mind these sort of how, what, where, time spent aspects, as well as the general definitions of information literacy, to make sure we talked around all those areas. And the aspects I pulled out was, again, that searching for information has to be quick and easy. And alongside that, people are much more likely to search for things that they wouldn't have done in the past because it is quick, because it is easy. It's not an effort to go out and seek information anymore. They'll jump on and get little facts. But that means as well that the sort of things people bring back tend to be facts and small nuggets of information rather than anything too in-depth. Next one, again agreeing with the general literature that information needs really are contextual. They're really heavily influenced by the primary activities you carry out, and they often rely a lot on the GPS functionality in a lot of these devices as well. So the sort of things people were saying they searched for when they're out and about were things like train times. Somebody's talking about car parking. Said, oh, I don't need to bother where car parks are. When I drive to a new city, I have a quick search for where the car parks are. When I'm waiting at the traffic lights to go into the city centre. And my phone will tell me where to go to park my car. People talking about shopping. So when they're out and about shopping, one person saw a lawnmower and thought, is this a good deal? So pulled out the phone and searched for that model of lawnmower and found out there was somewhere else that sold it for £5 cheaper, 200 yards down the road. the sort of searches people were doing were to do with the environment they found themselves in. Searching can be social, so things, social networks like Twitter and Facebook were used heavily as a source of information, and primarily Facebook in the people I interviewed with. And it wasn't going on them and searching for information, it was setting up the networks in them, so information came to them. So, I mean, before I did this, I was thinking of sort of social information as going on Twitter and asking you all a question to find out things. And it's much more about building up the networks in the first place and setting up your preferences and saying what you like and the pages you like in Facebook. So that information automatically comes to you then instead. So you don't need to search it out. You use these social networks to push it to you. A really interesting one for someone that has an abysmal memory is that people are using mobile devices as an extension to their own memory. So they no longer had to remember things. So I've got a terrible memory. Instead of remembering what time the next session is or what the options are in the next session, I can look on my phone and find out. So I've outsourced my memory to my mobile device. And one person was talking about, I'm gonna read you a little quote from what he said. He said, "It has become like an outboard brain for me. And in a way, it's kind of an extension of me. It's interesting that having something like this will allow you to delegate remembering facts and free you up for critical thinking." So he was saying, that's a big chunk of my mind I don't need to bother with anymore. I've forgotten about remembering things. That makes sense. He said, I can think about things more. I've freed up my mind space for more important things. There was a real strong sense as well that people use mobile devices and access to the internet from them to bridge between devices. Oh, in fact, I said at the start there was three different things I've done to model mobile information use today. There was a fourth. I changed my slides at breakfast time this morning and dropped them on Dropbox. I put them into the cloud, which if I fancied doing, I could look on my phone later, and I jumped on the web here and downloaded them from the web. So people will move things between devices. And I found a lot of that when people were searching for information. So they might search for information from a fixed PC and be quite happy taking a snapshot of it or dumping the PDF in Dropbox, perhaps, of the information they found to read on the mobile device when they had time. Or conversely, searching for things when they're out and about and thinking, that's too tricky to read on a little screen, and sending it back somewhere so they can read it on a fixed device later on. So people really happily moving things between devices, and that affecting their search strategies. And last of all was information constantly being pushed at us. So you're no longer having to seek out information. Mobile devices are constantly pushing it at you. And I'll just illustrate that from a quote from somebody, because it probably matches up what I do. This person says, there's always the distraction of it will go beep at you, and you'll think, there's something I'm supposed to be doing now, or there's somewhere I'm supposed to be, or I wonder who that email's from. So information isn't necessarily something you have to seek out anymore. With these sort of things, it's constantly getting at you. And there's real issues there to do with information literacy, with being able to cope with that information. So I've probably talked too long there, haven't I? So I'll let Peter come back on.
Now we come back to the practical bit, really, in the sense of what we actually been doing back at the ranch. Well, that's my ranch in Luton, 30 miles north of London, where the airport is. Okay. And in our library, one of my colleagues devised an Android application for our library, the Library Anywhere. We've started using that, so that will help mobile access. We've made a whole host of just-a-minute videos, and we're trying to get people to use those via their mobile. And I've been pushing those particularly via QR codes. And we devised this poster here, trying to get people, this is one of my most heavily used books in my library, Management and Organisational, but oh, I wouldn't want to read that. But they all have to, poor devils. And anyway, that poster is by the, where the book is. So despite we've got 20 copies, this will help because we've got an electronic copy as well. I mainly deal with master's students. Many of them are from the Indian subcontinent. And therefore I did a little survey recently. And I managed to get 116 responses. I'm very persuasive. And what I found out is that we're running away with ourselves. And this is one thing that I will pass on to you. I was a very enthusiastic advocate of Web 2, and I've been criticised for that sometimes. And in fact, things move more slowly. So in other words, these are quite, some of these students are rich. It's not that they can't afford these things, but it hasn't actually got there yet, which gives us a chance to start developing our services using mobile devices, but you can see the figures on here. I was pleased to see that 36 of them knew about QR codes. I did tell quite a lot of them about these, and a number of them are using them. But what I propose to do when I get back is to do some focus groups and take this further, and therefore this will help me next academic year to start developing these particular services.
So we've done very similar things to Bedfordshire at Huddersfield, University of Huddersfield. So, well, I tend, when I create videos, to pop them on YouTube, because I spent a lot of time thinking about mobile formats when I first did mobile stuff, and looking at all the different formats and thinking, where can you put them and this, that and the other, and what would work on some phones and what wouldn't work for others, until I twigged that it was being incredibly stupid. And this big company would do it for you. So, YouTube. We've got an app. And the reason we've got an app, I think, I should probably scrub this out of the tape at the end, was just after the boss got an iPhone. We've used text messages for all sorts of things, including teaching. So, things like a series of 10 text messages to back up the induction messages we gave at the start of the term. As well as for Ask a Librarian type things, we use text messages a lot. Played about a little bit with the idea of location-aware services and augmented reality, just in terms of where we're using Facebook and Twitter and all these sort of things that can tag where you are and making sure the place is tagged. So when people open augmented reality apps, they can see the tweets without necessarily knowing the library's there. If they bring up a Twitter layer in layer, they can look around and see the tweets that are coming from the library. I use Poll Anywhere, which is the polling system that I brought up at the start. Because we've got Quizdom handsets, we've got these interactive handsets, clickers, that are quite like, but are a pain in the neck to use, to put politely. So I've been using people's own mobile devices to do polling instead, so I might as well. And use QR codes for loads of different things, mainly at the moment for linking things like videos and extra resources and quizzes to print handouts. But I think the big challenge now is all these sort of different things we're doing, thinking about how people do interact with information on the move and focusing it more in future. So we're actually trying to meet their needs, rather than at the minute what we've tended to do is do everything we possibly could do. So I think the next step on is focusing things a bit so it's meeting their needs rather than what I enjoy playing with at the time. Right, that's all our contact details. The slides will be on the university repository through the top link there, along with the audio, hopefully, if it works. I'm going to bring up the results of the poll in a moment, if there's any questions, and I'll leave them up with all the people ask questions.
We won't really have time for questions
now,
but I'm hoping that we might at the end, because Peter and